Welcome to the Andy Staples Show, post-game brunch edition. I know you guys are cooking brunch right now. You're going to send me pictures of it. It's going to be great. I might send you a picture of my water bottle because intermittent fasting does not allow for breakfast or brunch.
Oh, you're an intermittent fasting now.
That's exactly right, Richard Johnson. By the way, our guest today, the great Richard Johnson. There are a million places you can find this guy. A million places. One, Moon Crew. That's the main spot. That's where he and the great Spencer Hall and Alex Kirshner and a lot of the really, really fun people and really smart people who cover college football have landed. So Moon Crew. Also, you can watch him on Thinking Out Loud on the SEC Network, which is a fantastic show. You're the Greg McElroy of this year, right?
I hope so. I'm better dressed, though.
Definitely.
From what they tell me.
There is no question about that. No question about that. You can also listen to his podcast, Split Zone Duo, with Alex Kirshner, which is fantastic as well. Last week, they had their former coworker, Stephen Godfrey, on. They were making fun of the NCAA and talking about video games. It was outstanding. So, but, Richard, we are here to talk about a pretty interesting Saturday in college football. We are recording this just as the Alabama-Georgia game. Well, let's be perfectly honest. We're recording this just as the Rays game has ended.
Exactly. As wait, you're Pasco County's own Andy Staples, right?
Well, no. I covered Pasco County high schools for 2 years for the Tampa Tribune. That does not mean
you are not actually.
I am a Pasco County person. I did not grow up in Newport Richey or Land O'Lakes or Dade City or La Cucci or Zephyr Hills. I spent most of my childhood in Seminole County in suburban Orlando. Okay. So, but yeah, no, but the Rays in the World Series. So Richard sent me a message. He's like, I realize Alabama Georgia is over, but you got to give me like three more outs to get this done. So Richard, we just watched Alabama, and I feel like the score is misleading because this feels like it was a closer game than that score.
Yeah, it's funny because the sort of the result, like there are some things that I think lead you to the result and lead you to see how the result is plausible. But then when you watch the game, like you're like, I don't really know how they did that. So Andy, if at 6 o'clock this evening before this game kicked off, I told you Stetson Bennett threw the ball 40 times in this game, what would you think happened in the game?
I would think Georgia couldn't run the ball and got desperate. But that's not what happened.
But that's not what happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like if I told you Stetson Bennett threw three picks in this game, I think you would probably say, okay, Alabama won the game by a lot. But like one of the picks wasn't even really a bad pass.
One of them went through a guy's hands. So that one doesn't count either.
Right. And so it's like, I don't know. It was a very weird game. But then again, you go back to it and it's like, okay, the proof is kind of in the pudding. Georgia goes punt, punt, interception, interception, missed field goal in the second half. And Bama goes punt, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown.
Let me go back to 6 o'clock and ask you a question. If I told you Mac Jones threw a pick on the first play of the game, would you believe that Alabama won by 17?
No way. Like, there's no way. And also, there is another, like, you look at Najee Harris runs 30 times 150 yards. I mean, I would say Georgia got invasion of the body snatcher in the game, right? There's no way Georgia allows 150 yards in this game. Zamir White had led the team with 10 carries. 10?
But averaged 5.7 yards a carry.
I don't know.
And Georgia didn't keep pounding the rock. They threw it 40 times. None of it made sense. But perhaps that's why Georgia lost, Richard, is none of it made sense.
Yeah, I think Georgia deserves a ton of credit. I think Kirby deserves a lot of credit for, and Andy, I don't know, you know, if you've done any reporting to this, but like, so the Jamie Newman thing comes out of nowhere,
right?
As far as anybody knows, right? And so my sort of theory about Georgia's entire offseason was for 9 months they had been architecting the offense for this guy who can move and can RPO and all that sort of stuff. And then 2 weeks before the season, he opts out, and then you're screwed. So, I thought that Georgia deserves a lot of credit for rolling the ball back and going back to, what's fairly comfortable for Kirby because of the defense. But, it's not exactly easy to sort of roll the architecture of your offense back in 2.5 weeks.
And this and wasn't the guy either, because when Jamie Newman opted out, they assumed it was going to be DeJuan Mathis.
So, Georgia does deserve a lot of credit for this thing being functional. And you see some of the things. You see what they see in Stetson Bennett, I think, when he's on the field, right?
Yeah.
He can operate this offense. He's really good over the middle of the field. He was a lot better tonight, I thought, on the edges of the field. I think that Georgia deserves a ton of credit for scheming around some of his deficiencies. I thought a lot of their joy came on short side of the field throws. I think they said, hey, we're not going to make you throw to the field against these guys because they're fast enough to recover and pick you off. I think for the most part, they got him into advantageous situations in the passing game and schemed around sort of where he was deficient. But at the end of the day, you have to go toe-to-toe with these guys. And the defensive pass interference call was awful. Okay, I'll give you that.
That was terrible. Yes.
Georgia has a delay of game coming out of a kickoff.
Right. Yeah. One call is not, unless it's the Auburn call against Arkansas last week. One call is not going to do that. Let me throw another theory at you. Stetson Bennett in this game was Mac Jones in the Iron Bowl last year. Not quite ready for the moment, but you give him some more time and he's going to be ready.
Sure. You see it. I there's a little bit of proof of concept. He did Mac Jones throws that interception off one and off Najee's behind in that game. Mm-hmm. Stetson Bennett throws a pick that was on a good throw. You sort of see it. I said this to our pal Ralph Russo earlier in the week on his podcast. I was like, look, Alabama can beat Georgia playing the way Georgia wants to play. I do not think Georgia can beat Alabama the way Alabama wants to play.
I'm with you on that. And that is, I think, what makes Nick Saban as good as he is they can beat you however you want to play them. And that you saw they beat Ole Miss the way Ole Miss wanted to play them last week. They beat Georgia the way Georgia wanted to play them this week. And that is what has made Nick Saban so successful and so consistent over the years. There aren't many teams that can do that. Alabama can do that. No. Clemson can do that. Ohio State can do that. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, it is in many ways, shapes, and forms the class of college football. I think Alabama was... obviously Alabama was better on defense and I can't wait to watch the game back to see exactly how they sort of figured some things out in the second half. Alabama still has problems in the second level of that defense. It wasn't as bad as Ole Miss. Georgia was not going to do the things Ole Miss did to sort of exploit Alabama on the back end and sort of break Alabama on the back end. Objectively, Georgia has the talent, one would think, to beat Alabama sort of going right at them, so to speak. Ole Miss didn't. They did what they had to do to try to score points, and they scored a lot of points against Alabama. So I sort of say that to say, in the beginning of the game, you saw Georgia did some stuff with motion. They ran some split zone plays, and it again looked like Alabama doesn't practice run fits. I don't really know what the deal is there. Smarter men than me can figure that out. But I say it to say Alabama's not perfect. But now here they have a few weeks, right?
Yeah.
Before they really play anybody to figure it out, right? They got Tennessee next week. I don't see Tennessee doing anything like this.
We're going to have to talk about Tennessee. We're going to have a very hard conversation about Tennessee at some point during this episode. One thing we haven't pointed out yet, Richard, that I feel like we need to. This is going to be meeting one of two.
Yeah.
Let's not forget what happened in 2017 where Georgia got housed by Auburn at Auburn and then came back and beat them in the SEC championship game. Now, granted, Kerryon Johnson was hurt. It was a different team with a hurt Kerryon Johnson. But still, don't think that just because this game had this result that it will be like that when they play again.
Yeah, I would imagine when they get together in the Georgia Dome or wherever it is that they end up playing it, it'll be closer. Georgia will learn. I think Georgia's defense, all things considered, I don't think Georgia's defense played well enough to win, but sort of the dam sort of broke at the end, and there's just not really a lot you can do.
Yeah.
You know, it just sort of fell out.
Though I will say, I mean, we probably knew this going into the season, much less going into this game, but nice to see it reinforced. Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith are the best receiver duo in the country. The fact that they can lose Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy and still have these two guys on the roster, and Mechie, who was on the roster, then just steps into a bigger role. It is incredible how they've turned from a team that choked the life out of you for so many years to now a team that can just explode on you for points at any time.
I think what's got to be the most frustrating for Kirby, honestly, is that he was there and watched Alabama turn it from murder ball to evolution. He was there through that. He lived through that. And I imagine if you're Kirby, like, that's the thing that probably would really, really get me.
But the thing is, you were there. You know that. So you've got to try to do that too.
So do it again. Yeah, so replicate it. Yeah. And I did not think Kirby was going to be the one Saban assistant that was going to get it right in so many ways, structurally and with the administration part of the program and all that sort of stuff. And to a T, he's checked off just about every box except for the big one.
Except winning the game. And that is the big one. But I'm with you there. Roster-wise, administration-wise, infrastructure-wise, they are right there. They just cannot get over the hump on the field. And it's funny because I went on a radio show on Friday, and it was a show where you could tell they cover pro football most of the time. They don't cover much college. And they said, well, if Georgia can't win this one, should Georgia just give up? I'm like, what do you mean, like drop the sport? Like, this is the stupidest thing I ever heard. They're right there in a national championship game, in an SEC championship game. And look, tonight it got away from them, but they were right there for most of the game. So, yeah, I don't think Georgia is that far from Alabama, and it's not a case where if they play again, Georgia can't win the game. They could. If Stetson Bennett grows up between now and then, that's a pretty close game.
Yeah, and I think you saw, they affected Mac Jones now. Yep. Don't get it twisted. They got after Mac Jones
a ton of yards, but they affected him.
Yeah, you know, they got after him a little bit. I think in the beginning of the game, I think you saw Georgia definitely searching on defense for the thing that was going to affect him. They brought three different corner blitzes in the first three drives.
It was crazy seeing all the pressure that they were bringing. Now, I will say Georgia did a good job picking it up for the most part. Alabama did a good job picking it up for the most part. And then Mac does a good job usually sensing, with the exception of the first play.
He was a little hurried at times. I think you could see, it wasn't a seeing ghost thing, but there were some times when you're okay, they are definitely speeding up his processing, and he is definitely having to make decisions at an uncomfortable rate for him.
Yeah,
there were a couple
it's
times.
It's not seeing ghosts, it's seeing very large man in front of me about to hit
yes.
me.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So while that game is going on, we were locked in on that. Not much of the world comparatively was watching this, but Florida State takes a massive step forward by taking a big lead against North Carolina and then hanging on for dear life. North Carolina drops a pass just, you know, on fourth down. They have a chance to tie or win the game, but Florida State pulls it out. How big a win is that for Mike Norvell and his program?
I mean, I think that, I don't think either of us think North Carolina is a top five team in the country.
No, you got to put somebody there, though.
You have to put somebody there, and I get it. I have my own thoughts about whether we should be ranking teams this season anyway before certain other conferences start playing. But be that as it may. You need this. You need this for Florida State because I think that I think the most embarrassing thing for Florida State, and I do use the word embarrassing seriously, is that they were losing in ways that did not look any way different from the last 3 years, right?
Right.
I mean, it's still the same procedural
crap. And you're like,
why
did we spend all this money to fire Willie Taggart when we got the same thing? Now I think it started at Notre Dame last week where you saw a light go on.
Right. They were life. There was life.
Yeah.
Particularly the way Notre Dame plays, it is not that out of the realm of possibility for a group of 19 and 20 year olds to sort of, don't want to use the word quit, but sort of throw in the towel. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame's rolling all over you. It is easy to see that. They did not do that. They came back this week again and I held on for dear life. I mean, there's no other way to say it. They were up, what was it, 31-7?
31-7, and win the game 31-28. Sam Howell mounts a furious comeback against the team that he was committed to for months and months and months. But they didn't come back. And Florida State won that game, and that's a way to step forward if you're Florida State. I mean, you look at the schedule from this point forward. Louisville, Pittsburgh, NC State, those are winnable games before they play a distinctively unwinnable game against Clemson.
Sure. every time I looked up, like it was on the second screen, but every time I looked up, I was like, oh God, North Carolina scored again. Oh God, North Carolina scored again. It was like, is this really going to happen? I like Jordan Travis. I liked a little bit of what they've been doing with him the last couple weeks. It doesn't look like he did a ton in this game. And I just don't think they really asked him to do much. I think
he had the first touchdown was kind of a classic, you know, because he's brought in as the runner. That was why they got him in the first place. I mean, he got through a crack that looked like it was about 2 inches wide to score that first touchdown. But yeah, a lot of that, I mean, they had a pick six by Josh Kando. There were a lot of things where the defense was playing really well. It was a team win. It was almost a team loss, but it was a team win. And you will take that if you're Florida State. Now,
looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Speaking of programs trying to get where they want to go, let's have that conversation about Tennessee. Because Kentucky had not won in Knoxville since 1984. You saw a lot of... The number one album was Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA. The number one movie was Supergirl. But this was a butt kicking that started out as Jarrett Garantano throwing a couple of pick sixes and Kentucky taking a lead. And the second half was just Kentucky whipping Tennessee's ass.
So Jarrett Garantano is a fascinating football player because you see it. You see it a lot of times. There it is. I think some of the big throws that he hit against Georgia, you're like, whoa, okay, all right, there it is. And then the three turnovers on third down last week. This week, I think two of those were on third down. I'm not sure, but I think two of their turnovers again were on third down today. They spotted Kentucky 14 points, and I sort of tuned into that game around halftime and was like, okay, Kentucky's offense isn't really going to blow the doors off of anybody, but Kentucky is in a perfect game state right here now where all they have to
Kentucky's
do is sit on the game.
To sit on leads.
Right.
They're not built to come back, but they can sit on leads all you want.
If there is one thing I'm sure Eddie Grant loves, it's the fact that all he's got to do is run the ball and sit on the game for 30 minutes. Look, so Tennessee and Miami, I think, were in the same spot today. Which is, do not let the butt kicking last week beat you twice. You know, we've seen Miami in similar spots. It's usually against Florida State. They build up, they're undefeated. Florida State kicks crap out of them, and then they lose out the rest of the season or whatever. That has been a thing of the past for Miami, and given what they did against Pitt, seems like a thing of the past for now. Tennessee, build up to Georgia. A lot of people think you can maybe even win that game last week. I saw a path there too. It doesn't work out, so then what? The Tennessee that I saw week one against Carolina, I was like, okay, Tennessee in prior years finds a way to poop the bed and lose that game, right? Mm-hmm. So just because you don't beat Georgia does not mean you have not progressed as a program. But this is where I say, have you really progressed as a program? Because to do this at home, not going to cut it. Not going
to
cut it.
I thought it was interesting to hear Jordan Rogers and Cole Kubelik on the broadcast talking about what Jeremy Pruitt said to them about Jarrett Garantano. Because he said, you know, we put so much on him. We're actually making him play quarterback. You know, he's setting protections. He's doing all these different things. To which I want to say, that's great, but you don't get any extra points for that. So
right.
If that's maybe take some stuff off of him. Or if that's too much, if that's so much that keeps you from trying another quarterback, then you need to change what you do instead of expecting the quarterback to be something you know he's not. Because they keep putting all this on Jared Garantano. We know what he is. He's been there for a long time. Don't ask him to do more than he can do.
I just pulled up the box score. It's worse than I thought.
Oh, it's bad.
He's 14 of 21 for 88 yards and two picks, obviously.
After the pick sixes, yikes, they put in Harrison Bailey for a bit and then brought him back, brought Garantano back. But you could tell his confidence was shattered. And that
because they've done this before, too.
Yeah.
They've yanked him in games before.
They did it in the bowl game last year. This is not new. But the thing is, I respect the fact that you would like your quarterback to handle all these responsibilities. But again, you get 0 points for that. That does not make you don't get spotted 16 points at the beginning of the game because your quarterback sets the protections. You know, you can have him looking at the line of scrimmage and the touchdowns you score will count for the same 6 points as if he did everything himself on the field.
Kentucky wins this game with 4.8 yards per play. I mean, it's just
it's ugly.
Kentucky wins this game by 20 whatever points. I'm just like, what? Like, how much have you really progressed? How much is it really different? This is, again, the same song and dance for Tennessee again and again and again. And it's this is where I'm like, as a Tennessee fan, like, I get the frustration. Like, every year, building up to it, and then just the air gets let out of the balloon, and you get stuff like this.
Well, and the thing is, this was avoidable. That's the problem, and I think that losing to Georgia was unavoidable. Georgia's better than you. Georgia has better players than you. Georgia might be better coached than you. That's okay. Unavoidable. This was completely unavoidable. You have better players on the whole than Kentucky. They are better coached at Kentucky. Kentucky's players are better coached than a lot of players. That's a good staff there. But you didn't have to lose this game if you're Tennessee. You just you made some philosophical decisions going back 3 years now that you need to let go of. And now what you got to do to win the games.
And now the problem is, you're Tennessee and you're almost Diet Georgia about to go up against that Alabama team on national television next week. And it's just like, when Alabama goes up 2 scores on Saturday, the game is over. I mean, it's over.
Yeah.
I said the Georgia Alabama game when Bennett threw the pick, the crossbody pick, I was like, done. Game's over. We can all go to bed now. There was like 10 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
If Alabama gets up 2 scores on Saturday, the jig is up.
Yeah.
Alabama gets up 2 scores on Saturday.
So while we're talking about things that continue to not change, let's move on to Auburn.
Oh, boy.
Auburn goes to Columbia.
I don't get it. You're going to have to explain it to me. I don't get it with Auburn. I don't get. And maybe. Better. And I've said this. I'm like, maybe I'm holding them to this standard of 2013 that's never coming back, right? And they're just not that program anymore. And they are what they are. But I'm just like, this South Carolina. And to be fair, South Carolina did what it needed to do to hand you the game on a silver platter. Will Muschamp made a bad, in my opinion, calculus decision to not go for two when they scored that last touchdown and potentially go up 9 points. They let you back in that game, give you the window, and you don't take it. I don't understand why Bo Nix hasn't progressed. I don't understand why you've got three robots at wide receiver that look really good and you can't find ways to consistently get him the ball. I don't understand why you're dominated. I don't understand why you targeted a good corner. What was it, 27 times today? I don't get it. I don't get Auburn.
It is very confusing. And here's the other part of it. They get really excited when they have good years and they give extensions out. And so Gus Malzahn's buyout, if you were to get rid of him after this season, $21.5 million.
Holy.
Not as bad as a couple years ago. Still a lot of money. So I just, look, at some point, they got to get over the hump. But I don't know what the problem is. And I'll tell you why we expect so much of them, Richard, is their talent level is not maybe what Georgia and Alabama is, but it's very close. Mm-hmm. It's usually them and LSU are kind of in the same boat, and they're slightly above Florida and Tennessee and those guys. So the level of talent there makes us think they have to be good every year. Why can't they be good every year? But they just are so inconsistent.
Yeah, and I don't know if – so the whole Gus Chad thing is like, what are we doing there? It doesn't seem like Chad is doing the sort of vintage Gus. You know, they got a little Wildcat with Piggy, but
I just don't think they can run it. I don't think they have the line to run it up with the backs. And that offense,
they've got a really good running back, which is the other
Tank's
problem
really here. Good. But that offense, whether Gus is calling the plays or somebody else is calling the plays, does not work unless you are consistently running the ball between the tackles, because that is what opens up the pass game for everything else. And since they've realized that Tank's their guy, they've been a little more consistent running the ball, but not really. They don't scare you like they did with Kerryon Johnson in 2017. They don't scare you like they did with Trey Mason in 2013.
Yeah, and this is the thing where it's like the year sort of gets away from you losing a game that you probably shouldn't, right? I mean, you stole one last week. All right, congratulations. But I don't think anybody felt good about Auburn over the last 6 days.
No, they should have lost to Arkansas. Now.
And now here you are losing to South Carolina now. We were talking on my podcast last week. We were like, look, the loser of this game, this was an anxiety bowl coming in.
Yeah.
You know, the loser of this game there was some agita to go around.
Felt a little bit like the 2016 Auburn LSU game, which got Les Miles.
Yeah. Where it's like the loser of this game is in hot water. So I don't know what you do with Gus at this point. And it's like, I don't want to be so like fatalistic about it, but it's like, did Auburn just miss the window? Like, did they miss the window in 2017 when they don't beat Georgia the second time around? Like, did you just miss the window, and is it not coming back?
Well, it's not coming back this year. They just have to figure out, because their next two games are winnable, but they're also extremely losable. So
if they're playing like this, they're losable.
Oh, if they're playing like this, they're losing them. And so they're at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss's defense was much better against Arkansas on Saturday, but they lost the game because Matt Corral threw six picks and Arkansas just had short fields and punched it in, or had pick sixes. And then they play LSU, which, you know, we don't know what LSU's going to be. We don't know what LSU's defense is. But so Auburn could go 2-0. They could go 1-1. They could go 0-2. If they go 0-2, they might be finding that money.
Yeah, it's they may get the yellow fellow on the phone then.
Man, you got to sell a lot of yellow wood to pay for that buyout. That's a lot. That's a big stacks of lumber right there. Let's talk about the team that really did beat Auburn last week but didn't get credit for it. Arkansas, Sam Pittman, SEC Coach of the Year for sure. National Coach of the Year maybe?
Shoot. I mean, I think the people who are saying they're the second best team in the West need to relax for a second.
Let's not go crazy, but
yeah, let's roll it back a little bit. But I don't want to take anything away from Arkansas. I mean, the fact that they won a SEC game itself, huge deal.
They should have won three at this point.
But the way they put, so and this is where I don't want to say this game was, or this lead sort of was kind of built on a house of cards, but it kind of was. 21 points off turnovers, two goal line stops on Ole Miss. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Ole Miss, on balance, Ole Miss probably wins this game 5 or 6 times out of a 7-game series if you played 7 times. But Be that as it may, Arkansas did what it needed to do to win. Barry Odom, it sort of looked like they did the same thing they did against Mississippi State for the most part. Every time I looked, they were dropping a whole bunch of dudes into coverage and making Matt Corral make plays. Barry Odom is doing a great job with that defense. The Arkansas's offense is doing what it needs to do to score points. I mean, score 33 points in this game. I mean, you know, one would imagine you may need a little bit more to beat Ole Miss, but if you turn them over six times, and Lane even said that you're never going to win a football game. You turn the ball over six times.
No.
Ever.
And Hudson Clark, redshirt freshman walk-on DB, he's replaced an injured starter. Three picks. Grant Morgan, the linebacker, was playing with one arm. He almost picks a ball off with one arm. And you're like, oh, he's playing with one arm. There's no way he can intercept a pass. And then later he does and takes it back for a touchdown.
Yeah. Felipe, the renaissance of Felipe Franks. I don't know. They are doing what they need to do to win games. It's really cool to see. I know I saw you earlier in the day. We're doing some discourse about offensive line coaches becoming head coaches. It needs to happen.
It's going to be the hot new thing now.
That and special teams coaches, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, Arkansas is winning football games. And like for that program, like this is a game that past Arkansas, similar to like talk about past Tennessee, this is a game that past Arkansas finds a way to lose, right?
Yeah.
You get up, you're unable to sit on the lead, etc. Similar to, I mean, kind of like last week.
Yeah.
Last week, adversity struck. You found a way to lose that game. Wasn't your fault, but you lost the game. But this week, sat on it, did what you needed to do, won the game. That is progress. That is immense progress from where this program was the last few years.
And Texas A&M is riding high, but Arkansas's next game is Halloween in College Station. If Arkansas plays the way they've been playing, they can play with Texas A&M. I don't know if they're going to win that game, but they can play with them.
I don't think Texas A&M is going to run all over them. I do not
know. Barry Odom's doing a great job as the DC. Now, the one thing I said all week was this is an interesting case because you saw what Lane and that offense did to Alabama. But Kendall Briles is the offensive coordinator at Arkansas. Barry Odom, the defensive coordinator, can go to Kendall Briles and say, "What drives you crazy?" Because Kendall Briles is Lane Kiffin's former OC. He's the brother-in-law of Jeff Lebby, who is the current OC at Ole Miss. So Barry Odom had a great resource. And, oh, by the way, all those principles that Ole Miss runs, Arkansas runs on offense every day in practice. So they've seen it all. The Arkansas defense has seen all that.
Ole Miss did not try to – I watched most of the second half. Ole Miss did not do – or didn't look like Ole Miss was doing some of the things that gave Alabama trouble. This is – so we've got this thing where I think – what you're seeing this year is you're seeing teams beat other teams a very specific way, and then you're thinking they're going to carry that week to week, and it doesn't happen, right?
No,
LSU
week to week is not a thing this year. We got to get over that.
LSU law or Mississippi State beat LSU in a very specific way. No team is going to defend Mississippi State like that until Mike Leach. As long as Mike Leach is there, it looks like. And Mississippi State is not that team, right? Ole Miss did some things to Alabama that Georgia was not going to be able to do to Alabama because Georgia's not that team.
Correct.
Ole Miss did some things against Arkansas that they didn't do against Alabama because Arkansas is not that team, did not defend them that way, all that sort of stuff. So I think you see some of the limitations here of Ole Miss. They hired Lane Kiffin for a reason. You know, they got rid of the last coach for a reason. So there are some things that Ole Miss needs to sort of tighten up and get better at to become a more complete football team. I have sort of been saying my party line has been they're going to play 10 of the same game all season. And it looked like for a little bit that this was going to be another situation where Ole Miss was going to kind of rise from the ashes and it was going to be squirrely and maybe we're going to have overtime. And then the last turnover sort of ices it.
Yeah, it's just amazing to see Arkansas because they were so bad. Remember, Chad Morris got fired when they lost to Western Kentucky in a blowout at home when Western Kentucky was starting the quarterback that Arkansas had run off.
I mean, the wild thing about, and Sam Pittman deserves all the credit in the world for this, is not only was Arkansas bad last year, they were also talentless. So I thought, right?
No, that's what I'm saying. Talent on that roster. He's getting something out of it, yeah.
Sam Pittman is getting, I don't know if it's blood from stones, but Sam Pittman is getting something out of this roster legitimately. Jonathan Marshall at nose tackle, that's my guy. That guy's an absolute spark plug in the middle, and the defense really does hinge on him. But yeah, Sam Pittman and that staff, all the credit in the world. They are getting it out of that roster.
Richard, can we pour a little out for our hopes that the ACC would be interesting this year? Because Louisville went into Notre Dame and showed us that Notre Dame is probably not capable of hanging with Clemson.
All week, I was like, man, Notre Dame's really good. I think Notre Dame can do it in a couple weeks when they get Clemson, et cetera, et cetera. And then that was a wet fart today. That was tough. I mean,
glad they won for their sake, but that was not pretty.
Glad they won. It was going to be a rough week for Brian Kelly, I think, either way. If they lose that game, I think it's doubly bad, obviously, because you lose to a Louisville team that is not ready for prime time, frankly. And I don't know. I don't really know who in the ACC is going to come close to these guys, because it's just like to hang 70 on a conference opponent, 35 in the second quarter.
My guy, Joe, the pride of whatever little tiny town in Alberta he's from. I can't even Brooks, Alberta. It's like halfway between Calgary and Medicine Hat.
It should have been worse. Trevor threw two picks in this game. I mean, it's like if you look at some of the advanced box scores on this game, it is tough to play the game of football more comprehensively well than Clemson did in this game, particularly in the second quarter. I mean, it was quite stunning.
Yeah, they and it feels like they flipped a switch, because remember a couple weeks ago against Virginia, you're watching them and you're going, you know, maybe Miami can do some stuff on these guys.
Right. And they were in a dogfight late in the third quarter.
I went on a radio show in Charlotte, and my guy Josh Parcell had a good point, because I brought that up. This was before they played Miami. And he goes, you know Clemson was just bored, right? And I said, no, it can't be. This is a different team. He was completely right. They were just bored. They've turned on murder, death, kill mode at this point.
It's a little early. So Clemson doesn't, and I give Clemson a lot of credit for this, right? Like, Clemson doesn't really make many bones about the fact that we are going to be at our best in December and January. It's pretty rare, because everybody wants to pretend that it's a week-to-week game, et cetera, et cetera. No, Clemson sort of is like, hey, we're in championship phase at the end of November, and that's when we really turn it on. Last week, I thought through halftime, okay, maybe they're in championship phase a little bit early, but they did play with their food against Miami a little bit. Even though that win was so dominating, they left some points out on the field. It could have been worse. In this game, nah, absolutely did what they needed to do. On defense, I don't know how we let Brent Venables get two shutdown corners.
Not fair.
But it does not seem fair to the rest of the sport that was allowed to happen. Those guys are really good on the outside. Good luck.
Guess who they play next week?
Who they got? Riddle me.
The Syracuse Orange team that got blown out by Liberty at home.
Man. That's
remember 2 years ago when Syracuse nearly ruined Clemson's national title run? That will not happen this time.
No, I don't. It could be. It could be DJ. Trevor could go down and DJ could come in, and you're not getting a Kelly Bryant redux.
Trevor may only play a quarter in this game.
Yeah. I think, did you see the stat? This was the first time Trevor has actually gone over 400
yards. Yes.
Because he never plays four quarters.
And they're so efficient most of the time.
Right.
So, yeah, it is going to get ugly next week. But I got to ask you, how excited are you for a couple more conferences joining the fray? The Big Ten and the Mountain West on Friday. You've got Illinois, Wisconsin, and then the whole bunch of them all come in on Saturday.
Yes, thank you for joining us, Big Ten. Thank you for gracing us with your presence. Mountain West, I'm excited to see Boise, because I want to ramp up to Boise and BYU as a potentially very good football game, I should say. This is the where I'm like, okay, so Notre Dame gets Pitt on Saturday, right? So that could be dumb. But next Saturday, I think, shapes up to be a lot better than this Saturday. There's some weird games, some fun games. But yes, the Big Ten does join us. Ohio State against Nebraska is
Going to be a bloodbath. Okay. But
Nebraska's,
they both deserve credit for getting the game played at all, because if not for those two programs, I'm not sure they're playing any games.
Nebraska, be careful what you wish for. Michigan and Minnesota, I believe, is the college game day game next week. I don't really know what to expect from Michigan at all, honestly. I've really zero frame of reference.
No, and we don't know about Minnesota either, because their OC left for Penn State and they brought in Mike Sanford, and so they have Tanner Morgan back and Rashad Bateman opted back in, but we don't really know what they're going to be either. So this is, I feel like it's almost like the beginning of the season again in this one aspect.
I sort of haven't minded the sort of like phase in
staggered start.
It hasn't been bad, because I think I've like, okay, I sort of know the state of play with the teams in the SEC and the ACC. Like, I sort of know what they are. I'm comfortable with them. God knows about the Big 12, but I'm sort of used to what those teams are going to put out. Now I got to get used to a whole another batch of teams again. Purdue, Rondale Moore is back. I'm going to be watching that. Iowa is another team that I'm like, you wanted to play this season so darn bad. All right, we're playing it.
I'm ready. I'm ready for it all. I was looking at the schedule. I just popped it up. I just got more excited, because you got teams in the Big 12 that took the week off that are coming back. Next week will feel like a full
yes.
college. Like, you remember what you felt like the first week of SEC play? And you're like, ooh, this is all right. This is starting to get real. It really, really, really gets real next week. Richard, thank you so much for joining us. We can listen to you. Split Zone Duo is the name of your podcast. @RJ_writes is where we find you on Twitter. Moon Crew LLC, where we find your writing. Thinking Out Loud on the SEC Network on Monday nights. Can't miss television. You and Spencer Hall. How did you talk them into putting you on TV? I'm so happy, excited, and proud all at the same time.
I don't know. One of these days they may find out we're grifting, but until they do, we're going to have some fun.
Richard Johnson, thank you so much. I hope everybody enjoyed brunch. I am now allowed to eat if you are listening to this afternoon, and so I guarantee you I am eating a very large sandwich. I lost my bet to Ari Wasserman, so you can be excited about Friday's show. Not nearly as excited as if he had lost the bet, because I guarantee he's not doing 50 push-ups. I have to do 100. I can't do them all at once, but we'll get them all knocked out during the podcast. Blame Arkansas and Ole Miss for not scoring enough points. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.